XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And for us, the last 3 hour tour of the first half of the year. I guess there's two ways to to view that. Couldn't have got here any faster, or holy cow, how did 6 months go by as quickly as they have? But much like horsemen, we're kind of a creature of habit. Casey and I, we take this week, you know, this coming week we're off, and the week between Christmas and New Year's, it's the same. It's Groundhog Day. That's why we love Groundhog Day, because our existence feels like it to some degree, right? I mean, you know, racing a little bit like a hamster wheel, and every so often the hamster does. You know, it does get out of that wheel and pause. So that's what this is starting. Well, in fact, Tina asked me last night. She says, does this mean, you know, because it's also her last day of school. That's also part of the timing here. And she said, we were in bed last night. She said, does that mean that you're not, you know, you're not going to handicap, you're not going to do anything? And I said, well, I'm already going to have handicapped, you know, certainly the cross country tomorrow and the lion's share of the Churchill Foster card. Why, you know, as Marty McGee says, why wouldn't you? it's really good, so we're looking forward to it. And I am really excited about betting, and I'm sure we'll talk about it with Marty and or Ed and or Scully, and potentially even with Nick Tamaro later. Nick and I'll go through the cross country, and he might have some other opinions, certainly around the Belmont card. It is Mother Goose Day tomorrow. But the stake in New York that's part of the cross country, and the cross country pick five is all stakes. All stakes sequence. It starts with the Bashford Manor, and then goes to Thistle for the Ohio Derby, which is a nice, I got to tell you, I got five horses. I'm anxious to see what Ed and James and Nick think. But I've got like five horses that I think can win that. Wild Applause is the third leg in New York. And then back to Churchill for the Wise Dan and the Stephen Foster. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to lean heavily on Maxfield, which you can understand. And he's, you know, it's not just reputation that's. Yeah, because I know there's, you know, certain school of thought that says his reputation is exceeding his, you know, his actual accomplishments. But from a handicapping standpoint, he's, you know, the clear horse to beat. We'll see, how much backing and how enthusiastic he's viewed as, you know, either a lone A or, you know, an A with maybe a, you know, there's a couple of horses with it. Clearly, Silver Dust has, you know, runs races that are, you know, in proximity But Maxfield, the clear horse. There's no doubt. That Wise Dan. There's quite a few in there too, actually. There's at least three or four. So, anyway, we're going to do plenty of that handicapping mindset as the morning unfolds. We'll also kind of look ahead and tell you where, what you can anticipate next week. While we're gone, we're going to have a little best of course, and we are going to miss, then some years we have bordered up to July 4th weekend. It depends on the calendar. So we will miss the Iowa Festival of Racing, as well as a couple of other prominent lead ups, but we'll come back on the other end and get right into among other things Indiana Derby right when we get back. We're going to be off the 5th as well, Case. We'll take the, because it turns out we're staying in Lake Placid we're leaving the 5th, so we're up in Lake Placid for maybe even an extra day. Hammer was trying to convince me that we should swing up to one of the islands in Lake Champlain, which actually sounds appealing. I'd like to get up to Canada at some point, too, this summer, but, got to wait for the borders to open. And since we mentioned Canada, a hearty tabernacle sacrifice. How about the Bleu Blanc Rouge last night? Overtime, propelling Les Habitants into the Stanley Cup final. And there was something really graceful and elegant, including it being Jean-Baptiste. That certainly was amusing. The last time the Habs won a cup, I was living a block below St. Catherine and about three blocks from Atwater, from the Forum. And so when they won that cup, which was also a surprise cup, everybody poured onto the street, onto St. Catherine, and then literally paraded down. And some would call it a parade. Others would call it a riot. Down St. Catherine. And so, we were watching on TV, and I forget who was at the house. The house was a bit of a Grand Central station for downtown partying flow. And so we went up to St. Catherine and watched people, parading down St. Catherine, breaking the occasional window. They did break right into the liquor store. What? Oh my God, I'm going to forget what the liquor stores are called. For God's sakes. They're all state run. They broke the window, the plate glass window of the liquor store, and just completely gutted it. That's a wonderful memory from 93. Ideally, the Islanders, it'd be really cool if the Islanders could at least, make it to the finals. And if they make it to the finals, I'm a Sabres fan first and foremost, but there's not a lot to root for. And it's actually been a sad week with Rene Robert being taken. So anyway, the Habs winning last night, and I got to admit, I actually dozed off. I fell asleep in the third period, so I did not see the goal live. I woke up early morning and pulled up the highlights. It was great. Let me give you the rundown today, and I promised yesterday, when word was spreading the passing of Rich Glazier, And I can't let it wait until July 6th. There's no way. So we'll spend the first, I don't know, 40 minutes plus here as we get going. We'll bring in three very well-known Delaware Park personalities from three arenas, really. John Curran. And it's funny, the last time I spoke, the last time I spoke to Rich was when I called him to see if he'd, you know, do a season preview. You know, obviously the season was delayed and everything. And he said, I'm not up to it. He said, but you should have John on. And I'm glad I'm disappointed that we didn't have a specific last opportunity to talk to Rich. But it gave us the opportunity to, you know, have a bit of a send-off for John Curran as well, who was in his last, you know, was going to be starting his last year calling races. And Curran and Glacier were literally an entry to a degree. I mean, in terms of the face and voice of Del Park, you know, over the last 30 plus years. So John Curran is going to join us here shortly and appreciate Rich Glacier. Andy Simoff, I have to reach out to Andy, and I'm very glad I did, because Andy said he'd be very eager to provide a remembrance and an appreciation. And Michael McCarthy, Trevor's father, and himself, a multi-season leading rider at Delaware Park. So kind of three arenas. And I'm sure if I opened, if we had a setting where we opened the phone lines, you would hear from, I suppose, every single fan and horse player that came to the game from the late 80s through recently. I mean, literally, I think 35 years, 34 years, something like that. 87 or 88, I think Glacier started full time. And you know, I personally had great appreciation and affection for Rich from a number of standpoints, but particularly because he left the grandstand, so to speak, and made a career for himself at the racetrack. And to some degree, I've done the same thing. Won't be as long, I don't suppose, as Rich's career was. But he was an accountant by trade, and he literally saved his own life by, getting out from behind the desk and getting in front of the camera. And he just was just instantly, as I wrote yesterday, was instantly likable. There was just an affability to him that, it was impossible to to dampen. Just a congeniality. He could tell he was just, first of all, he loved Delaware Park and everything about it. And, the people from both sides, the patrons and the horsemen and the community from that side of the aisle. And it just was infectious. His TV presentation, the recap show and the shtick, he did love to include shtick, the little track that could, and a horse that loves you at Delaware Park, and Bungie, the horse that would drop down with his play of the day, on and on. I mean, he made it fun. He taught, and his brother his brother Joel, who died a couple of years earlier, maybe it might be 5 or 6 years now, but his brother was a professor, a teacher, as it happens. And Rich had that, he wasn't professorial, it wasn't lecturing. It was a way of, just educating by delivering it's just information, that you kind of picked up. Turf was his shtick. I mean, that was his favorite thing, and turf breeding. He was not somebody that whenever I would watch him, he wasn't somebody that, shoved selections at you. At all. That was not, that really wasn't him. I mean, he would have a play of the day, turf play of the day. And that was, his specialty, really. Casey's trying to pull together John. The way in which he got to the show, and the way he got to Delaware, he was brought in as a kind of a replacement to do the show, and then Vince Francia, whose name is probably familiar to you more because of Turf Paradise than Delaware, but it was Vince Francia that signed him on full time, and it just. It went from there, stories and his just glee, and I wrote glee on Twitter, his glee about being at the racetrack and the whole milieu of the racetrack just was just obvious. It poured out of him. John Curran joins us, and John, as I wrote you, just so. So saddened. He's 73 and has been sick the last few years, but this really feels premature, and just feel terrible for everybody at Delaware and everybody that grew up around the game watching him and were drawn into the game by watching Rich Glazier.
A long period of time, and as you've mentioned like that, I started in 84 Delaware Park there, and a couple years later Rich joined us, and basically we were like a team 1 and 1A for like 35 years, and it's been tough the last couple of years. I know he had health problems there, and it was tough for him to get around there, and he just didn't work last year because of the pandemic. They always wanted to come back. He said, once I get through this, I'm going to come back there. So he never gave up there, but it overcame him, and he just he couldn't last much longer like that. He was doing dialysis and things like that 3 days a week, and he was getting weaker and weaker like that. So, it's kind of like, but he still would bet every turf race from here to Hong Kong as much as he could because he loved turf racing. And I must say he was probably the best turf authority that I've ever seen in the game. I mean, nobody did what he did, the work for research for turf racing, like F and breeding lines from all the way back to, Northern Dancer to Prince Quillo to Rebo. I mean, he had everything. I mean, I learned so much from him as far as handicapping turf races go, and I don't think anybody could hold a candle to him when it comes to that.
That was his. That was really his specialty, and he was ahead of the curve, John, when it came to, you know, appreciating grass racing, and that was to his credit for sure. His whole presentation, whether it was, you know, the paddock activity or the recap show, he just, you know, he's one of these personalities that people are drawn to, and I was trying to think of a parallel, and in a lot of ways, I guess the best comparison is he was Delaware's Harvey Pack.
Yeah, and in this day and age when everything is like a cookie cutter almost, like, and everyone's, you know, pick fours, pick fives, Rich didn't actually like to give out picks. And
right.
He said, I don't want to influence the bettors on what to bet there. I'll just try and give them some information and, you know, little things that I know and interviews with jockeys and trainers and things like that there. And he kept it that way throughout the, you know, his entire career there. And, you know, people enjoyed his banter with the, you know, with Bungie and his little antics that he did, little commercials that he made for the track, like that. So he was unique in that aspect there, which I think a lot of fans like. He was like down earth, a racing person. And much like me, I mean, I love to go through the crowd and talk to people. It's kind of fun to do that, to know the fans and talk to them and relate to them. And, you know, if they have questions, they can just call it. Everything's a media circus anymore. Everything's, you know, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or this or that. And I kind of like the one-on-one activity to get at the racetrack with people. And Rich was the same way. He liked to be out there with the fans, talking to the fans. And he had a great rapport with all the fans at Double Oak Park, that's for sure.
And you know, it wasn't what's remarkable about that part of his tenure is that he was a bit of a, not a bit, he was fully an ombudsman for the racetrack, and he would sort of gather complaints and queries and player and owner frustrations and bring them to management, and just an incredible resource from that standpoint, you know, somebody that had his finger on the pulse of, you know, the concerns of the horse player and fan, and that, you know, that is something that management, track managements, you know, sometimes are, you know, a little blind to. So he was a tremendous resource and an advocate for the patrons.
Yeah, you know, sometimes people so isolate themselves from the fans, and it's you know, it's a shame because that's a loss there. And I enjoy, like, you know, now that I'm retired, I go to the track and I go to Double Oak Park, you know, once or twice a week. And it's kind of fun. I was sitting there talking to trainers afterwards like that, and they were all talking about the same thing about Rich's personality. You know, he would talk to them, and, you know, he would call them up there and congratulate them. I remember Rick Porter, who unfortunately passed away just short time ago. And, you know, Rich would call him after a big race that he won at that, and Rick would always get back to him. And he had that kind of rapport with the owners and the trainers and the jockeys and all, which is kind of great to see. And, you know, everything, again, is on social media, people are relating to. Like, he got down to 101, and which was really, you know, the basis of him. He was a people person.
He got there, I want to say, 87, 88, and you may have just preceded him, right? Your arrival wasn't much before that.
No, I started when the track reopened. They were closed for like a year, and then they reopened there, and I started in 84, and Rich was a couple years later. So we were a team for about 35 years, and I don't think there's any combination in the country anywhere that's been together that long. For an announcer and a paddock host there, that probably sets a record there. But, you know, we got along, and we were both handicappers. We'd love to handicap and make some wagers, which we both did. And it was fun. We would talk about, you know, I would talk about the track biases today, and Rich didn't want to hear any of that. He was a pedigree person. He loved pedigrees. He loved certain trainers, and, you know, he was not into figures or numbers for the most part. he just would look at sheets today and like, what is that? But he was an old-fashioned handicapper. And so, you know, there's still room for old-fashioned handicappers in the game, which is kind of nice there. And he would kind of tell like it is. And you kind of appreciate that coming from someone who can relate to the fans and can relate to management too and get along with both ends. It's kind of like, you know, it's hard to do. But he did it, and he did it well.
I'm thinking about some of the things, you know, the stories that I had heard about him even in advance of him visiting the show. And he would come on, you know, typically with a preseason visit to kick off the season. And then I would get him on for, you know, for Del Cap. The Del Cap was, you know, his favorite thing. And, yeah. I had heard the story about, you know, him while he was in Vietnam. He did two tours in Vietnam in military intelligence, and the story of him managing to get a bet in at either the 68 or 69 or maybe 70 Dell cap. He managed to get his mother to get a bet in on the Delaware handicap from Vietnam. He considers that the longest distance bet placement ever.
Yeah, back in the day, that was, I remember those stories too. When he would talk about that, you know, and how he started. Yeah, he had passion for the game, which is kind of like, you know, you can see that in a person like that. He loved the game. Actually, put all that work into, like, you know, into generation for the breeding for horses to find out turf horses who could run on the turf there, and he put a lot of work into that. And you know, I to this day use most of the stuff he taught me about turf racing as far as, you know, breeding goes there, and it's, I mean, he put up some great winners, like $100 horses. How could he play that well? Look at the breeding. I said, what breeding? He said, well, you have to go back. And, you know, and he would trace the genealogy down, and he was really good at that. And, you know, you could just sense the passion in the game. He loved the game. And you're right, you know, when he got out of what he was doing with the count and all that, I was putting the stress on his life. And he found something that he actually loved, and he got to do that for like 35 years, and he was betting before then like that. So if you can get lucky enough in this game, and I feel the same way, to be doing something you really love for that long of a time, you've had a pretty good life.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I'm sure that Andy Simoff is going to join us next, John. I know I saw some quotes from Andy on that front. I mean, in terms of a fascinating life and incredibly successful life, you know, serving his country and then you know, the family and an extended family, and I mean literally, you know, just you want to talk about somebody that really did not venture too far away from the center, right? I mean, he was born and raised right there in Wilmington, and went to DuPont High, and married his high school sweetheart, the former Amy Applebaum.
He's a local guy. I'm a local guy. I grew up 3 miles from Garden State Park in South Jersey, where I still live. But I used to go to Delaware Park when I was a kid, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, and it was a great place to be, and it still is. You know, and you'll talk to Andy about it. I saw him yesterday at Delaware Park there. They were having a picnic in the Grove, and him and a few trainers, Jamie Ness and Scott Lake, and, you know, Chris Griffin from Philadelphia Park came down. And, you know, you can just have a great day at Delaware Park, and I think we all love that about the track there and being a people person. Rich would, you know, the owners loved him, the jockeys loved him, the trainers loved him there. And that's hard to do in this game.
Well put. And John, I mean, with your retirement last year, there was already an atmosphere that said, you know, that it wouldn't be the same. And now with Rich gone, it just, you know, it just doesn't look or sound. It won't look or sound the same again at all. I mean, he you and he together. Just synonymous. It's there's no other way to present it in terms of a face and voice of, you know, of one facility. It's really quite amazing what you accomplished together, and we're just so sad to see this, you know, to have this day arrive.
Yeah, I agree with you. We were a team all the way through it there, and it's kind of hard to miss someone who's been so much a part of your life. It's like, you're right, it's an extended family, the racetrack and all the people working there and in the TV room and everything like that there. It is like a second family there, so it is quite a big loss.
Well, the season goes forward at Dell Park. You got the Oaks coming and the Kent and then the Dell Cap, and I'm sure that management will find an appropriate way to kind of memorialize Rich Glaser at the track, either with a stake or the naming of a the winner's circle, something, because he meant so much. It meant so much to him, and you know, he meant so much to it.
My first inclination was name the turf course the Rich Glaser Turf Course, something like that.
Oh, I mean, perfect.
That's
perfect.
Where he lived.
Perfect. Perfect. That's all right. We'll make that happen. Let's
I'll get a good.
John, I hate that this was the reason for the call, but I greatly appreciate the visit.
Well, thank you, Steve. It was nice talking about somebody who meant so much to the game, the business, and in our lives, too.
John Curran, everybody, the voice to go with, really, the face of Del Park. And we'll stay right here and bring in Andy Simoff. And I wish I got the same kind of greeting with Andy. I wish I could be saying, first and foremost, you know, congratulations to Andy Simoff on a really strong run here at the start of the, you know, the front half of the season, Andy winning races on a daily basis. But Andy, this is really sad for the Del Park community and for all of us who appreciated Rich Glaser as a conduit to the facility.
Sure, Steve. Yeah, good morning. Very, very true words. I mean, it's a real loss, and, you know, it's like anybody else. We've all lost people that we love and respect, and just the finality of it all just hits home. Like the last few days, that, you know, he just kept coming into my head about all the things we've done and all the times we've spoken and all the time we spent together, and he was just a great guy. And, you know, like I was thinking the other day, a lot of times when people pass, they'll say, well, you know, so-and-so, you know, once you got to know him, you know, he was a great person, or he's, you know, there was no disclaimers with Rich. He was, you didn't have to get to know him. You didn't have to, like, you know, once he accepted you, people would say he was a great guy. None of that with him. Once he was a friend to everybody from the minute he met him till the day he passed. I mean, he was just a great person. And there's so many people that are just, you know, heartbroken over this whole thing, because he was just a great guy and just a great asset to the game, the Delaware Park. You know, he served his country in Vietnam. You know, he did 18 months over there and never complained, never talked, you know, anything about, just the only thing he talked about Vietnam was when he had to call his mother to bet on the Del Cap. That was his favorite Vietnam story.
It's the greatest.
You know,
the greatest story.
He'd always love that story. He goes, I called my mom. I bet 20 to win on the. He goes, then I had to wait because the time was screwed up. And I kept calling on this little phone. They had to crank it up and all. And he goes, Ma, did we win? He goes, yeah, I forget which horse it was, but he won. So you see, he bet the Del Cap. I think he bet it twice from Vietnam. But that was his big Vietnam War story about how he met the Del Cap.
Two tours in Vietnam, and what's amazing to me, and I didn't do the math in my head, but he was DuPont High class of 65, and
right.
He's only 73.
He's young.
He went. He must have gone literally right into the military, either drafted or right. Andy, I mean, do you know that backstory for him to?
No, I know he was very young when he went in. He didn't
tell
me specifically, but he probably went right from high school, right, or there, shortly thereafter, you know. And like I said, he did the two tours, but never complained, never said a word. Just the Del Cap was the only thing he would mention about his whole time over there.
Well, he was in military intelligence, so maybe some of what went on was classified. But everything else he was open about. I mentioned, you know, his wife Amy, who was a year behind him in high school, the two boys Michael and David, and grandchildren. I'd read about his brother Joel when Joel passed. I guess it's 4 years ago, who was a teacher. You referenced Andy in the comment I saw on Twitter. You particularly can appreciate it. There was a real Hamish away about him. I mean, he brought out a personality that had you know, a real concern and for others, and he brought that to the backyard and that amazing paddock. He was constantly circling and talking to everybody and gathering anybody that had a problem, right? He would solve problems for patrons.
Exactly, yep. He'd try to help everybody, be a nice guy. And it wasn't because it was his job. It was his passion. It was his love. That's what he loved. He loved to help people, be nice to people. You know, I used to kid him all the time because when he was in the paddock, he'd never say anything bad about like a horse or a train. You know, this guy's on a little swamp or this or that. He'd never say that. So one day I was sitting up in the Del Cap, we're having lunch. I said, Rich, let's try this. Let's try something new. Let's try, be more like David Letterman, you know, a little zingers here and there. And he goes, oh, that's not me. I said, come on, let's try. What do you think? So then, like, I'm saddling a horse. He goes, and this horse, I really love this horse. He goes, but Sim off the trainer, I'm not too sure about him. You know, I don't know if he can get the job done. And I'd come up to the escalator. Did you hear what Rich said about you? And I would laugh, and he would laugh, you know, but I was the only guy he would do that to. Oh, I got such a kick out of it. You know, he goes, oh, this horse really looks good in here. You know, he's coming off a nice race. So he goes, the only setback is Simoff guy. We're not sure about him. He had this horse ready. Oh, it was so funny. I got such a kick out of it. And that was like our running joke.
the fact that he... And I mentioned this introducing the series of conversations. John Curran, you just heard, and Michael McCarthy is going to join us. Michael McCarthy, the retired rider, not the right. active trainer, the sire
father of Trevor.
Exactly, sire of Trevor.
That's his new claim to fame.
I like his claim to fame of selling that barn at Fair Hill. I'd mark that down as an accomplishment, what he pulled off there.
One thing about Mike, he's got the Midas touch. He's done that a few different times with real estate in South Florida and other things. I mean, he's nobody's fool.
I love it. Well, when it came to to having a horseman, I knew that you were a natural to pay tribute.
I mean, everybody you talk to is just a sad few days, you know. And I always thought he would, you know, I'd spoken to him a couple of times when he was, you know, when the COVID came, he left, but it coincided right. with his illness getting worse, so you didn't know which one it was, you know. But I guess he was just getting sicker and sicker, and he hadn't come to the track since last year. And I always thought, because he'd been sick before, but you always think he's going to rebound, you know. And then when his friend came up to me the other day and told me he passed away, it just hit me like a ton of bricks, you know. Because you always thought you'd see him coming up the escalator, he's coming back, you know. You didn't think he was, you know, it would happen, but it's just a very very sad event. But we gotta, you know, pay tribute to him and just keep his memory.
Well, exactly, and. I know that the family suggested donations, St. Jude Children's Hospital or anybody's charity of their choice, any tzedakah will be appreciated in Rich's honor and memory. And with Michael joining us, Andy, I do have to say you're hitting it on all the screws right now.
Yeah, just got to keep it going.
Well, I hope we're going to see you at some point this summer as well.
Absolutely.
All right.
Saratoga, probably. I hope.
Perfect. And at the very worst, I'll see glimmering, shiny Simoff transport vans.
They'll be up there. Don't worry about that. We need to pay the rent.
I love it. Andy, thank you so much for this.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor to talk about Rich. Just a great guy, and it's everybody knocks this game and all, but without this business, what a community, the people we would meet, we would have never made that relationship, and that's the beauty of this business.
Well said, and really, he was a personification of all the things infectious about the game.
Absolutely.
That's what's so hard.
Coming up the escalator and seeing his smiling face every day, it gave you a lift.
Andy Simoff, everybody, and you can follow Andy on Twitter, and you can bet on his horses at Del Park. Andy, thank you. Turning to our third visit, and as I said, we can certainly. I could go in a million directions. John mentioned, you know, some of the other horsemen as well, that have been regulars at Del Park on the backside. We lost Michael. All right, so get Mike McCarthy back, and we'll round out these conversations. I didn't want to come back in 10, 12 days or whatever and do it then. I wanted to make sure everybody, while the thought is most acute, to pay tribute. This is one of these people that just, Andy, that's a great aside by Andy Simoff, that Rich Glazier didn't even want to have a negative thing to say about anybody, that he always was stressing the positive. And I'm sure that extended to the jockeys as well. Mike McCarthy joins us, who won his share of riding titles at Del Park. Michael, as I said to John Curran and Andy Simoff, I'm happy to have you visit the show. I hate that it's under these circumstances.
I agree. Terrible circumstances, but thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Mike, Rich Glazier and John Curran, 38 and 34 years respectively, at one racetrack, and the racetrack's a community, and that includes the jocks room and the backstretch, and certainly at a place like Delaware, with that incredible paddock, the most beautiful in all of racing. I read a story of Rich playing hide and seek with Trevor in the bushes in the paddock.
Yeah, so true. He was just great. I mean, the roles he played when he was interviewing some of the personnel from the racetrack, it was just great. And my wife just cannot forget. She loved Rich dearly. I have to say, our whole family is just shocked. He watched my children grow up at Delaware Park. I mean, it's really hard to talk about him. And I get emotional because he was the heart and soul of Delaware Park. He was the spokesperson for them. John Curran, same thing. Been there a long time. Those guys are just, they're lifers. They absolutely live, breathe the racetrack. And Rich watched my family grow up, as I said, and would do those silly little interviews. And one day he was playing hide and seek with Trevor. The other day I was chasing him around because he had said something about my wife. And, it's just little crazy things like that. It's just we have such fond memories of. And it's so sad to see him go.
His presentation about Delaware, what made him not different necessarily, because there's plenty of pundits or publicists and on-air personalities, however you want to characterize the television staff specifically, that love the racetrack. But given his and Curran's, and really a lot of the people that are right, that are in the family, in the Delaware Park family, that keep coming back. I mean, you see names at Delaware for year in, year out, and he was just uniquely associated and having grown up and brand having gone to the harness track. I guess he started on the harness side as a fan, and then once he was introduced to thoroughbreds in high school, it became even more.
Yeah, that's what Rich told me. He said, "Mike, I'd go to Delaware Park all day long. We'd get done and go to Brandywine for the Trotters, and go over there and watch them." I mean, he was just an avid race fan. He just loved it. He loved it, and his kids were a part of it for a little while. And it was truly his life, and he just loved it. He loved everything about racing. When I got there in '96, the incoming of the slot machine just brought better purses, and they brought better horsemen and horses, and it was like he was in heaven because he got to see all these personalities that he never got to meet before. You know, big names came in there. I mean, big trainers and owners, and he got to interview them all, and it was just, he was so in his element. He so loved it. It was just great. He was great. And if he looked down on us right now and just said, he would want us all to be happy and not be sad over him, because he was just that kind of guy. Like Andy said, Andy Simoff, he said, you had mentioned, he never said a bad thing about anybody. He was always in the positive. He just loved the game. He truly did. We're going to miss him a lot, truly.
I'm heading for a vacation, Mike, and I didn't want this to wait. I thought it was important that, you know, that players and fans, and, you know, I know out, you know, nationwide, as it were, not everybody necessarily tuned in, but, you know, anybody that did became an instant fan. He just made it impossible because he was knowledgeable and personable, and, you know, there just wasn't any, you know, he was just genial.
He had his funny, kind of corny little things and his funny little ways, and just, you could not like him. I mean, he was just awesome in that way. I used to love it when he would be in the paddock and he'd say he'd love the turf races because he just loved the Northern Dancer line, and he would always mention,
right,
everyone's down that Northern Dancer line. I mean, he loved the pedigrees. He just loved everything about racing. He loved it all. He was just a tremendous, tremendous good time for everybody to listen to him and for Delaware Park. He supported Delaware Park through and through, and he loved it. It was great to have him, and I was so lucky to be a part of him. And like I said, have him, you know, watch my kids grow up, and he always roots for Trevor and always asked me how he's doing. He'd come here to Florida, where I'm now retired down here in Florida, and he'd come to the races, and we'd get together and meet at Gulfstream Park. He'd come for a week or so and just would talk about, you know, Delaware Park and how Trevor's riding there now. And he was such a true person and friend more than he was a business associate. I mean, that's the kind of guy he was to everybody. So that's my take on him.
Mike, I appreciate this, and you know, I reached out to Trevor too, to get, because I did. I thought I had your number, but I didn't have it at hand. So I reached to Trevor, and he's, you know, how do you sense his transition is going out there?
Yeah, it's going tough for him right now. It's not easy, that's for sure. You know, there's a little things going on. You know, maybe the agent, you know, had to kind of readjust what he did in the past and that. So it's going to be a tough time for him, but he's up for the challenge. He wants to stick it out. He did go at the end of Santa Anita meet. So, you know, when you walk into a meet and you're not one of the Ortiz brothers or one of those big names, Luis Saez and, you know, Joel Rosario, you got to work your way in. So he's determined to work his way in. And he's going to stick it out and do the best he can. And he says, if I don't do it, I don't do it. I'll come back east and I'll try. I'll have to work hard and do it again. But he really likes it out there, and he's hoping for the best.
Well, he starts, of course, today, and I'll use this as the opportunity to mention, of course, that Los Alamitos kicks off today, and he's well mounted through the opening weekend. He's riding a bunch of different O'Neill and Sadler, and Owen Hardy's got him on a maiden on Sunday. Ryan Hansen today, and Charlie Treese as well. Paul Aguirre. So he's on, you know, he's riding for a bunch of different people, and I wish him the best. And when they get down to Del Mar, I got to think, I mean, that turf course should be, you know, right up his alley. He should, once he gets a couple of tours of Del Mar's grass, that's where he'll immediately stand out, I think, to horsemen.
I hope so. I would hope so. He is working the horses out for some of the right people. And like you said, you mentioned some of those names, and some of them are good. And I think they're going to give him some introductory kind of mounts right now to see how he handles those, because East Coast and West Coast, Steve, as you know, it's almost two different worlds. So they know of him and that, but just, you know, they don't know him personally, and I think that's maybe how they're working it. I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing in a way, but, you know, so some of the guys have him working the horses, which is really nice, and he's telling me that he's doing everything he should be doing. And now it's all a matter of, you know, getting the horse. I think Trevor's proven himself, and I'm not saying this because I'm his dad. You know, I'm the toughest on him probably more than anybody, but I know that he's proven himself to be able to compete, you know, on a you know, first-class level. He did well in New York the few winters that he went there, and before he left the Belmont meet. Now it's just a matter of getting the horse. So hopefully he can work his way in and prove himself.
Well, we're rooting for him, and anybody that's met him and anybody that gets to know him is going to like him and earn their respect. Michael, I really appreciate this, and we'll talk soon under better circumstances.
Sounds great, Steve. Thank you always for continuing your racing program. I don't listen to it all the time. I do have a little job down here that I'm kind of busy, and I try. It's hard enough to keep up with Trevor, but I just want to say thank you so much for supporting racing and keeping racing out there as much as possible. And thanks for all you do, bringing good and bad news of the sport to everybody out there. So thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mike. Mike McCarthy, everybody. Appreciating not just his son's exploits and career growth, but paying tribute to Rich Glazier. And thanks to Mike and Andy Simoff and John Curran. Let's take a break here, and we'll come back and kind of reset and get into the weekend preview, given that Churchill wraps up tomorrow with a fabulous Stephen Foster Day card, terrific stakes sequence, and Ed DeRosa will kick off that coverage. Marty McGee, Hammer, Scully, Nick Tamaro, Papo, all going to cycle through here between now and noon as we wind down the first half of the year. 2021. Back after this at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horse players, the Southern California Daytime Thoroughbred Racing Circuit is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse for our exciting summer meet. Opening day is Friday, June 25th, and will run through Monday, July 5th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific, and as always, exciting racing action is ahead. Our opening weekend features the Bertrando Stakes on Saturday, June 26th, followed by a great 4th of July weekend of racing. On Saturday, July 3rd, the Los Alamitos Derby heads the marquee. Past winners of this race include Eclipse Award winners, Accelerate, Shared Belief, Game Winner, and more. On Sunday, July 4th, Los Alamitos will host a live money handicapping contest with two berths to the 2022 NHC up for grabs. And on closing day, Monday, July 5th, the racing action will be headed by the Great Lady M Stakes. Horse players, remember that Los Alamitos features a traditional $2 pick six with a 70-30 split. This summer, exciting daytime thoroughbred racing is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM Sports presents